Good morning. Today we're in the centre of Bristol, where rich meet poor for a special edition of Politics West, looking at levelling up. Good morning. It's great to be with you. Now, many of your thoughts will be with Ukraine this morning, and ours are, of course, too. But we have decided today to keep this programme and its politics local. So thank you for joining us in the centre of one of Europe's finest cities, well, at least I think so. From here, you can see across Bristol's skyline and the docks, which are once again the beating heart of Bristol's cultural life. But just a few miles from here, the city's success isn't so obvious and people are struggling to make ends meet, quite frankly. The government's launched its levelling up plan, which it says will create more opportunities for everyone. Well, to discuss what life is like in the city and what's being done to help improve lives is the mayor. That's Marvin Rees. Also here to talk about their experiences of living in two different areas of the city are Nigel Horlock from Hartcliffe and Amari Cole, who lives in St. Paul's, the inner city. Now, if you recognise them, it's probably from the Black Lives Matter protests around the Colston statue, which used to stand behind me near the war memorial. Well, Seb Chowdhury has been to find out more about these two gentlemen.
Like most large urban areas, Bristol is a mix of rich and poor. But beyond wealth, it's a place with distinct communities.
I see the community becoming less, you know. I see us, the cohesion becoming less. I see lots of new people moving in who are not really community orientated, you know. It's gentrification, but in terms of grassroots community, that is getting less and less.
In terms of community building, I don't think that there's enough actual jobs locally. Yeah.
The government is telling us there's plenty of opportunity. They talk of levelling up and building back better. But what does that mean for people in two of the most deprived parts of the city?
There's all these jobs out there, that's right, but they cannot physically happen because you're not well educated enough, so it's just a dream.
You know when the government says they want to level everyone up and make everyone...
There's no change coming, all right, and it's going to get worse.
But no one's going to get old. Government's just promised us this. We'll change our life around today. We'll stop taking drugs, we'll stop selling drugs, or we'll go get a job. It's the same old crap. It's not going to be listened to.
So is levelling up in a better Britain realistic for communities who for generations have felt left behind?
You might remember Nigel and Amari from the aftermath of the toppling of the Edward Colston statue last year. Amari took to the plinth with a megaphone.
We all deserve to be treated equally.
Nigel took to the plinth with a flag. They appeared to come from very different viewpoints, but when we brought them together, they realised they actually have a lot in common. Yeah.
Even just like me and you sitting down having this chat, I'm sure there's a lot of things that you've learned and there's a lot of things that I've learned.
Now we've met up with them in their own communities, this time with their mums.
What do you think the community is like in Hartcliffe? How would you describe it?
It used to be a tight community, but it's not now. It seems like everyone's out for themselves. There's a lot of poverty here and a lot of depression.
A lot of people grew up in this area, believe it or not, and it's the 21st century, but people grew up not having jobs, never having jobs, and don't know what it's like to have a job or work. They just, thieving is their life, and they rely on benefits and stuff like that because they're on drugs, and the drugs has affected their mental health so bad that they just couldn't go and get a job because of the way they think, because of the way they look as well. And so that's affected a lot of it. There's a lot of crime going on in these streets, what you don't necessarily see every day.
So do you think there's a feeling that people on the other side of town, let's say in St. Paul's, have it better than you here?
Unless, just be honest and answer. Don't go on what people say.
The people, what I know from there, aren't no better off than me.
There's a good atmosphere around there. I do like the atmosphere up around that side of town. It's good.
They seem more happier than us.
Yeah, definitely more happier. Simples and that. I think that's on his way up, moving up the ladder, up very good. I know it is. It's moving up really well. It's becoming a nice area. It's becoming very valuable. People want to live there. People don't come to Bristol and say, I'm going to move to Artcliffe.
No
chance.
St. Paul's might be better located, walking distance from the city centre, but do people there feel like they're getting a better deal than the people in Hartcliffe?
What we shouldn't get caught into is this, you're getting more than me. What we should get caught into is actually understanding other people's struggles and saying, you know what, we need to work together to go to where we need to make sure we all get what we need. You know, we have a system that works for all of us.
It's about understanding that everyone's points are valid and respecting everyone's points and making the best decisions to move forward as a unit. Do you know what I mean?
So when the government says they want to level up, what do you make of that?
What we really need is, you know, not just for this area, but is an actual review of what is actually here and what is needed here and how it can be supported to build and grow. So when the government talks about levelling up, who are you talking about levelling up and what? And what exactly does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, politicians are good at words, but actually when it comes to seeing what that actually means, it actually probably means very little to the everyday person, like, you know, you and me.
Deprivation and poverty can lead to unrest. And in both St. Paul's and Hartcliffe, the simmering resentment has boiled over in the past into high-profile public disorder. At the time of the riots in Hartcliffe in 1992, former leader of the Liberal Democrats, Paddy Ashdown, stated that health indicators on the estate are more like those for a third world country. Levels of unemployment, crime and drug use were among the worst in the country. For all their similarities, race is the prevailing difference. Hartcliffe is a predominantly white area, while St. Paul's is predominantly black. So do the conversations about race create a stumbling block, preventing communities from working together to deal with their shared problems?
How much do you think race plays a part in it?
I think it's part of it. I think it's a very key part of what is keeping the city divided and people not wanting to actually address the issue directly.
Your BLM and all these things that put it in the media's eye, but I still think it's systematically hidden. Me personally, I think it's still there. It's ingrained and embedded in the system. Do you know what I mean? And the way it's set is that you can't really pinpoint or put your finger on it because it kind of hides behind an establishment.
After the upheaval caused by Brexit and the COVID pandemic, the government are now saying the future is one of hope and opportunity. But in areas where generations of people have seen no change, how optimistic do they feel about seeing positive progress in their community?
They need to do more, put more money in, stop closing the youth clubs, etc., and reopening it all. All they do is close things down, open the council, yeah. Hartcliffe, we get everything took away.
Some people are stuck in the rut, they don't care about what their kids get up to, but I think a majority of people now are seeing to out in the council estate, seeing how they are and want well for their kids. They don't want their kids to grow up the same way, so what they're doing now is forcing their kids to be educated. No one's going to do it for you. The government definitely ain't changing nothing, so you have to just force your children to do it. You have to force them into it. You have to be harsh on them, because otherwise the cycle's not going to change. And I'm afraid there's a lot of families in council estates where this cycle ain't going to change in probably two generations still.
What community is fundamentally about is about communication and moving as a unit and integrating into other communities.
We all just want to work and we all just want to live, you know, good quality of life.
Without doubt, areas like St. Paul's and Hartcliffe have faced many similar problems over several generations. Issues like crime and drug use stemming from poverty and a lack of aspiration. They share a city, but these two families also share something else: the drive to improve the situation for people in their own communities.
They've made the first step by opening up the lines of communication between the two areas. What they need now are more voices to join in and push forward the common goal of making things better.
Thank you, Seb. Well, let's take up some of the issues that Seb raised in that fascinating report. And the mayor, as I said, is with me, Marvin Rees. It's good to see you.
Hi, David.
Should Bristol be more equal, and if so, how?
It should be. This is obviously a challenge that goes back in the city for many, many years. I mean, through my own childhood, growing up in here, feeling like I was looking on a wealthy city and not participating in it, but even to my nan and granddad stories growing up here, you know, back in the day. But, I mean, tackling the inequality is a wickedly challenging issue. But what we've done in the city is really put inequality at the centre of what we're trying to do.
What does equality look like?
Well, we actually use the term inclusion more than equality, which means that we describe the city being a very wealthy place, two world-class universities, thriving tech sector, you know, a fantastic story to tell to the outside world, but many people not being included in that. That's jobs. One of the key areas for inclusion now is people having homes they can afford to live in and actually have a place in the city.
What you need, of course, although you need wealth and business, don't you, to create the money to share it round so that we all get a slice of the pie.
Yeah, well, the challenge is historically wealth has been created in the city and people haven't shared in that pie. And whether that be along the lines of class, geography, race, people have been left out. And again, that's one of the things that we've put front and centre at the challenges facing Bristol. How do we build a much more inclusive city?
Well, one point that both our guests agreed with is that there's a lack of community around. In St. Paul's, it was put down to gentrification. And that's an issue, isn't it? As places move up, they become desirable. People move in, house prices go up, and you can't afford to live there anymore.
Yeah, and again, I mean, in where I grew up, when my mum lived in the same house since 78, you know, that £16,000 house at the time, you know, and now the houses around there are a few £100,000.
So out of the reach of most people.
Exactly.
So
and because of the shift to rental, private rentals as well, we have more instability in the housing market because tenants can be told, well, unless you can pay another £200-300 a month on your rent, we're going to move you out and get someone who can pay.
Well,
on housing front, that's why we're building homes and building them affordable homes, but building homes to rent as well, like so directly through social landlords, so we can really anchor those homes into communities. But we do need the volume of homes coming through, and you'll know that over the last few years, you know, we really have pressed to get homes built in Bristol.
Nigel talked about Hartcliffe. He said people don't move to Bristol and say they want to live in Hartcliffe. Do those big, windy estates on the outskirts get the worst of all worlds?
I think they can do. I was just saying, Nigel, two of my nan's brothers, my nan was one of 11, where they were amongst the first people to move to Hartcliffe when they got slum cleared. They were from Eastern back in the day. But they can do, because I sensed this when I lived in Lawrence Weston. When we moved to Eastern, yes, we were poor and we were left behind, but we could walk to town and we could feel like we were part of the city story. When we were in Lawrence Weston and you know, if you're up in Hartcliffe, you're on the edge of that bus route, it can be too pricey and you can feel totally left out of this story that's in the middle of the city. I'd say actually one of the biggest examples of that over the last few years was European Green Capital. It was a fantastic story to Europe and to the rest of the world, but we know that many people in the city just did not have a part of that whole conversation, which is a challenge we picked up.
Another point that was made by Nigel in the film is that there's an education problem, and so people can see nice jobs but they haven't got the skills to get them.
Yeah, and again, we in the whole levelling up conversation, this is a point we've been making repeatedly. We talk about a skilled economy in Bristol, tech, green economy, two world-class universities, but where you need a diverse economy that offers opportunities for people who don't go out and get PhDs and go into the renewable industry. So we have to value caring, the caring profession, which we need as well. We have to have, you know, construction trades. So we are working at how do we protect that diverse economy that offers a whole range of entry points to people.
Does the debate about race prove to be a stumbling block to levelling up and actually pitting different parts of the same city against each other?
Well, it will if you pit different parts of the city against each other, but it doesn't if you actually understand how race works. And one of the points I've made repeatedly is there is a thing called white privilege, but my white mum and my white family did not lead lives of privilege. Right, those things are true at the same time. They're different. They're difficult to hold together.
So, what do you mean by white privilege?
Well, white privilege means that we're in a world in which having a white skin can actually, all other things being equal, will give you a leg up. But what I'm also recognising, and this is really important, that my white mum, bringing me up in the city, lived in poverty. My nan worked at Bright's old department store at the end of the road, never had opportunity within the city to fulfill their potential. So class is actually sits alongside race. They're not the same thing, but they're inseparable. And we have to understand how class and race work together to disadvantage people and lock them out of opportunity.
One thing that everyone experiences is rising prices. The council tax going up, road charges, parking charges going up, that always hits the poorest, doesn't it?
Well, you're jumbling lots of things up there, and they're all subtly different and they have different consequences.
Well, they're things that are sort of in your control.
Well, somewhat in our control. I mean, first off, on council tax, it hurts us to put it up, which is why we're the only core city to have a 100% council tax reduction scheme. So the lowest income people who can't pay their council tax can get up to 100% off. We've protected that. It costs us nearly £40 million a year. But we also have to pay for adult social services. We have to pay for children's services. We have to raise the revenue because government make the assumption.
I understand that, but it is the poor that end up paying, and that's that little bit of money they've got left.
And that's why I said we have retained 100% council tax reduction scheme. But it is about council tax, but it's also about us building homes that people can afford to live in. So as we bring forward affordable homes, then their rents aren't consuming all of their household income, and they don't have to face that choice between heating and eating, and that's where we've put at the forefront of what we try and do.
Okay, don't go away, will you?
No, I'll stay.
Interesting that you talked about the Brights department store. I went there for a job as a lift boy then, once when I was a teenager. Right,
probably a little bit after my man, I hope.
Yeah. Didn't get it either. Now, the long-awaited levelling up plan was announced this month by Michael Gove, the minister responsible. He said it would improve opportunities across the country and shift both money and power into the hands of working people. It was a part of the Conservative 2019 election manifesto. Remember that? It seems a long time ago. Based on the idea that communities who feel they've been left behind should get a chance to catch up.
It means making opportunity more equal. For far too long, the United Kingdom, England in particular, has had an economic powerhouse in London and the South East, but not everyone has shared in that success. So we want to make sure that overlooked and undervalued communities, from Middlesbrough to Mansfield, from Wolverhampton to Walsall, get the support they need, and that we shift both money and power into the hands of working people.
Michael Gove there, who says it's a noble project. Well, to find out if people on the street have even heard of levelling up or know what it's about, we've been out to gauge opinion.
Levelling up plan, I've never heard of it. Is it something that's just come out, something new the government introduced? Never heard of it.
I honestly don't know, honestly. I don't think I'm the right person for this, to be fair.
No, I don't have a clue either. I don't really watch telly.
No.
Oh, I've got no idea. Politics is not with me, honestly.
I don't know about it. I'm not up to date on it.
I don't know what you mean by levelling up, sorry. What is it regarding, sorry?
Do you know what? I don't actually know too much about it. I'll be totally honest. So I have no opinion whatsoever. I'm so sorry.
Is it just kind of like the, I don't know.
I don't really know, to be honest. Not a lot, don't suppose. I don't know.
Not much, really, because I don't know much about it, really. To pass comment, so I can't really say anything.
Levelling up plan. I'm not too sure what that is, to be honest. Can you explain?
Some views on the street there which might be of interest to the government. Well, let's meet MRI and Nigel. Welcome. Thank you so much for coming on our programme. First of all, are you two now friends?
Yes.
Yeah, we're acquaintances. We spoke a numerous times since then about things. And, you know, like I said, when we done an interview, it's about having a dialect and conversation and trying to get a better understanding for both sides, basically.
Nigel, were you surprised at how much you've got in common?
Bit, yeah, of course, you know, you think it's all one-sided, don't you? But everything now has broadened my horizon to how I look at things and stuff, so, you know, you need to look at it from both sides. A lot of people still aren't doing that, like I wasn't, so, you know.
Your two worlds collided over the Colston issue. Are you sort of at one with that now? Are you both happy with this plan, just to put it in a museum on its back?
Well, I don't know. I have some things which disagree with or whatever, or if you're going to put in a museum, then put in a museum how it was, not with the stuff sprayed on it and stuff what was done to it, because that still, in my eyes, promoted racism from another side. But, you know.
What do you think?
I think yeah, put it in a museum, leave it as it is. That comes with a history behind it, and it, you know, it has a story to entail in it, why it ended up there, why it is the way it is. You know, there's photos to see of how it was before, and I think it's important for people to be informed and have an understanding of the whole situation. You know what I mean?
Well, it's great that you've had a conversation and that, you know, there's some understanding going. But I know you wanted to meet the mayor and have a chat with him and put your issues directly to the man in charge of the city. Who wants to go first?
On what issues?
On any issue you like.
On the green zone. That is just hitting the poor.
Clean air zone.
Clean air zone. It's just hitting the poor. You're hitting the people who can't afford new cars. You're hitting the businesses that can't afford new trucks, like my business. That's just hit the poor right in the pocket. Okay. You know, we can't afford to buy new cars.
Let the mayor answer that.
So two things. These are points I've made from the very beginning on the clean air zone. If you look back at the headlines over the last 3-4 years, the points we're making very beginning, that the clean air zones are very blunt instruments and will impact on businesses and low-income households the most. So we were making that point. And at the time, we were taking a lot of hits in the press, by the way, because they were saying, oh, you're delaying, you're missing deadlines. We were saying to government, it's a very blunt instrument. Secondly, we're actually legally required to do it. We don't have a choice.
Okay.
So we're under threat of court action if we don't put a clean air zone in. But what we did do with government was to negotiate a package of support. So we got £42 million that we're able to use to support businesses to acquire new vehicles and support households. So we still think it's a very blunt instrument, but we've held the line constantly that we don't want it to fall on the shoulders of the most vulnerable.
How could that help my business? We drive lorries.
Well, we need to check. Trucks. We need to check your registration of your vehicles.
Okay.
Find out if they are compliant or not. Right.
If they're not Euro 6.
Well, then you'll be in a position to come to us and say, "Well, my vehicles aren't compliant," and bid into a £32 million pot to support your business transition its vehicles to compliant vehicles.
I never knew that. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
You see, do you understand that perhaps he's got the responsibility of making sure the air is clean? Yeah. You got the bill.
Yeah. So it's not really making the air clean, because now for us to avoid it, we got to go round a long way, and we're using twice as much fuel to avoid the clean air zone.
Okay, that's an interesting
point. There's 22.
There are some subtleties about that we can talk about after, which is it looks at areas where the air exceeds compliant levels, right? So actually, it's about bringing those areas down, there will be some redistribution, but where it is redistributed to, the air will still within legal levels.
Let me bring you in. What would you like to ask for that?
In terms of like the Level Up program, like what like protocol have you put in place to make sure that these cities that you say are going to be included are actually included, and that they have an understanding of what's going on? Because like, you know, this situation, what Nigel just said, like, he wasn't even aware of that, like, people need to actually make sure that the right people see and know and understand what's going on.
Yeah, so first, Levelling Up's not mine, it's the national government.
Nationals.
And we've had an issue with it from ever since it was announced, because it was a big statement and no one knew what it meant. And myself and local authority leaders of all political parties across the country were saying to government, what does this actually mean? Mm. Right, you're saying it's going to be about tackling inequality and building a nationally inclusive economy, pushing, but you've given us no criteria. We don't know how much money's involved, and so we couldn't plan. Now it's been announced. Okay, no new money, which is a bit of a big issue for us. We don't yet know what the plan is. We don't want to be totally negative about it, because then there's an opportunity that maybe we can take. But there's no real clarity. One of the points I've made to government repeatedly is they talk a lot about the north. The north of the country.
Yeah.
But you can't level up if you don't take account of the fact that some people groups get left behind irrespective of where they are. So if it's all about the north, Middlesbrough and so forth, then they miss out Hartcliffe, they miss out St Paul's. And that's not okay for me in Bristol. So we're making that case very strongly.
What's the difference between the government's levelling up agenda and your equality agenda?
Well, we're looking at the whole city. So we look from Lawrence Weston to Hartcliffe.
Yeah, but you're both trying to do the same thing, aren't you? It's both,
well, yeah, well, I might suggest, you know, humbly, that we have a little bit of a more nuanced approach to it. We do look at issues of class. You know, we look at issues around women being excluded, disabled people. We look at race issues. And we take account of all of those as drivers of inequality. At the moment, the government's national levelling up conversation is very, very heavily focused on geography and doesn't take account of particular people groups.
Yeah. So on a local level, like in terms of like youth centres and like the funding for that, is there any like steps being taken to like kind of, because I've noticed that there's not really as much of them as when I was growing up. There's quite a lot of residentials, camps and stuff, and now it seems like there's not really that much. Is there going to be like more funding available for those things, or yeah. is it?
Well, that's one of our disappointments with levelling up. And it seems to be very little conversation about local government and what does local government do. If you underfund local government, you don't fund things like youth services and those early interventions. And I think there's a lack of understanding too often in Westminster and Whitehall that delivery does not happen by national politicians pulling levers and getting outcomes in Hartcliffe and St Paul's. Delivery at the local level happens through local council, and for 12 years, you know, we've had funding cut from us, and it and actually undermines our ability to spend money. So we end up with £15 worth of need and a £10 budget, making very difficult decisions about what we don't fund.
What about the housing crisis? So the people that are poor that can't afford houses, they can't afford to buy a house, now they have to rent, so they have to pay even more. Why can't you cap on people or you buying houses, buy the tens, and using that as a business and then renting them to people that can only afford to rent, but charging them extortion? Why can't you cap that and then somehow work the council tax into their bill? People who own over two houses and use them as a business to rent. Why cannot something be subsidized?
So the buy-to-let issue
way?
That you're... Is there anything you can do about that?
They can afford to rent, but then they can't afford to save for a mortgage.
Well, we don't have the legal powers as a local council to cap rents in the private rental market. But actually, as you say that, in the next few weeks, Tom Renard, who's my cabinet lead for housing, is holding a renters' summit in the city. Yeah. And one of the outcomes from that renters' summit is going to be the basis of a letter we're going to write to government, again, pressing them to give us the powers to be able to intervene in the private rental market so we can begin to put rent controls in.
I suppose you do need landlords, don't you?
Well, yeah, of course you do, but the rent is too high in Bristol for people
That's
to be able afford to live.
Problems.
It's an average of probably £800 to £900 a month. Mm. You know, it's people can't afford it, and they can't, and they definitely can't afford to buy housing. And this is the poor states we live in, and it's just making it worse. It's made the gap bigger between rich and poor.
But that's one of the reasons, if you see the conversations with us and you see the cranes up, it's one of the reasons we're building houses. If you go down Bath Road, you'll see that block going up just opposite the fruit market. That's 100% affordable.
And then what would you call
affordable?
Well, social rent. We're not talking about 80% of the market. That's part rent, part buy. Okay. So people can buy, and then they're built to rent, but that's with a housing association. Right. But our drive now to build tens of thousands of homes in the city, the whole Temple Quarter development that we're looking at,
That's all well and good, but what you need to start doing with these builds within Bristol is use people within Bristol and not let the richer companies have the monopoly of the builds, because the smaller companies are not getting a chance in. Using companies from London to come and build in Bristol, it needs to be kept in Bristol.
Yeah. We could go forever, couldn't we?
Yeah, you could.
Thank you all very much, because that's it from us this week. Thanks to my guests, Amarai Cole, Nigel Horlock, and the Mayor, Marvin Rees. Well, one thing we've all got in common is that Bristol is our city, and we all want to see it thrive. I was born here too, and have seen lots of changes. Areas that were slums are now trendy, and other neighbourhoods have gone into reverse. But whichever part of the city or the West Country that we're from, perhaps we should all reach out to each other just a little bit more. Bye-bye. Thanks for watching.